there's a knock on and ripple effect of meningitis. I know what our family, you know, trying to navigate Evan through it all and through his loss. And he woke up the next morning, his sister was gone.
Yeah.
He went to sleep and she was there in the other bed, and he woke up the next morning and she was gone. And dealing with those kind of emotions, you know, it's the knock on ripple effect of meningitis. It has such an effect on the families.
The night of April the 1st, 2008, is a night that changed the Houlihan and Carroll family's lives forever. Ava, their precious four-year-old, woke up distressed. Eventually, this led to medical assistance, but unfortunately, Ava lost her battle. Listen as her mom, Siobhan, grieved but found strength to carry on to set up ACT for Meningitis, to educate, assist and inform families while keeping Ava's legacy and memory close to her heart. Keep looking. You'll find a beautiful rainbow.
Hi everyone, and you're very welcome to Sunny Oranmore today. This is episode 11, and I'd like to welcome Siobhan Houlihan for the chat today. Siobhan, thanks a lot for taking the time.
Thanks, Ronan. I'm delighted to be here.
Now, before we get on to ACT for Meningitis and the CEO work that you do and the wonderful group that you work with and the organisation as an overall, I just want to let people hear this line that I read during the week on the ACT for Meningitis Facebook page. Our lives changed forever, and we miss her every day. Now, we're talking about Ava, your beautiful little lady, 4 years old at the time. She would have been, as you said, she would have been 18, just gone. Would I be right in saying that?
Yeah, Ava was born on the 1st of January, and she was one of the first babies born in Ireland that year. And she appeared on the front page of the newspapers, and we were on the television. We were down and interviewed, and we always say that Ava arrived with a bang and she left a legacy behind her.
Yeah, because at the age of four, everything was going grand. Mm-hmm. March came in that year of 2008. And then on the 1st of April, your lives completely changed. Let's put it that way, yourself and Noel and the crew. Tell us what happened, first of all.
It was I was pregnant at the time, and I was due Noah. We knew we were having a boy. We had found out. Ava was four at the time. Evan was two, and I was pregnant with Noah. And Ava had actually picked his name because we knew it was a boy. And a few days before that night, she had helped me pack the baby bag to get ready for her new brother that was coming. And that morning, I had been feeling really unwell with my pregnancy, and I had really, really bad headaches. And I remember I was kind of a bit concerned about it. So I got her up in the morning and got her dressed and ready, gave her a hug and put on her, I remember her white jacket with the furry hood. And she was going to the Nenera. She was going to her Montessori in Oranmore. And I said goodbye to her, and I would see her that evening. I went into the hospital, and they decided to keep me in just to monitor me because the headaches were so bad and a little bit concerned. So they asked me to stay in for the night to monitor me. That night at 9 o'clock, I rang Ava and I spoke to Ava, and I asked her how was her Montessori that day, and she told me she'd learned about Afric. And I spoke to Evan, and I said goodnight to both of them, that I loved them and I'd see her the next day. And her dad, Noel, put them to bed that night. And a few hours later, Noel rang me and said, Ava's not feeling well. She's sick. And I was thinking, well, you know, she must have picked up something smaller, you know, that day, a little bug or something. And I said, keep an eye on her. And he put her back to bed. And for a few hours after that, she just wasn't herself. And she had vomit and diarrhea, and Evan slept through the whole night, and they shared a room at the time, and Evan slept through the whole night, and Noel had her up and down the stairs, and he was starting to get a little bit concerned, and he rang the out of hours service, and he said to them that she's not usually like this when she's sick. And they said, well, put on the lights, check there's any rash. There was no rash, just to keep an eye on her and ring later if you're still concerned. And probably one of the hardest things that I remember that night is that Noel told me after that Ava was asking where I was. So at about, I can't remember exactly the time now, but Noel rang back to say, Ava's really sick and there's an ambulance on the way. And I was in the maternity up in the room, and I remember I was lying on my own, and a nurse happened to come in to do a check, and I said, my daughter's sick and the ambulance is coming, and coming to check on her. And she said, oh, I'm sure it's nothing too serious. And then as Noel told the story, that Ava was lying in his arms and they were watching Tom and Jerry on the telly. And he said, he just looked down at her and basically she just closed her eyes, as if she was going to sleep. The paramedics came in, and I didn't know all this was going on at the at the time. And I remember running down to the front door of the hospital. And I can still picture myself standing there. It was pitch dark and it was really, really quiet. And I remember hearing an ambulance in the distance. And I remember thinking, God, that ambulance sounds like it's in a rush. You know, someone must be really sick. And the ambulance pulled up in front of me, and I could see Noel in the front seat of the ambulance. And he jumped out and he said, it's not good. It's not good, Siobhan. And the back doors opened, and the doctor that had come from the out-of-hours service was in the back of the ambulance and ran in. And they ran past us and brought us into the room, and brought her in as well. And they were working on trying to resuscitate her. And it was the thought of what was going on in the room. And I was so heavily pregnant, I remember thinking, this just can't be happening. This just can't be happening. And when we were standing there, I remember the priest walking towards us. And I still remember how quiet it was in the A&E. And I remember he said, I'm really sorry. I'm so sorry for your loss. And then the paediatric consultant came up to us and said, I'm sorry, there's nothing we could do. And they walked us down back to the door of the room where Ava was. And I still remember the doors opening, and there must have been 10 or 15 staff in there between doctors and nurses and consultants, and there was complete silence, and they all stood back, and myself and Noel walked up, and she was just lying there, and that was it. She was gone. Within 6 hours I've been sick, but nothing really, you know, nothing to stand out that it could have been meningitis at the time, I suppose. And I still remember that day. Just, I suppose, it changed our lives forever.
But you must have had a completely out of body experience, in the sense that how could all of this happen in as you said, in 6 hours? It must have been mind blowing.
So surreal. And I was conscious as well at the time that I was pregnant. And you know, I had the fear as well. I suppose I had to mind the baby that I was carrying. And I remember trying to make sense of it all. And I can honestly say now, looking back, that the reality of what happened, like, it was so long afterwards that it really, really hit home, because you feel like you're living a dream, that this really couldn't have possibly happened. I was talking to her at 9 o'clock that night, and she was perfectly fine. Gone up to bed, and to the reality of that, just literally, we always say, in a blink of an eye, she was taken from us.
And let's just go back a little bit for a second and talk about, you were talking about the perfect day that Mary had with Evan as well. I was just reading this, that it was almost like a perfect day. It couldn't have been a nicer day, Mary, Evan and Ava together. Yeah. Tell me about that.
It's so strange. Now we look back and think of things, and she, probably the week before she got to see everybody, probably the week before she passed away, she spent time on her own with her godmother. She saw her cousins, she spent time with them. She was at her friend's birthday party, and she got to spend time with everybody. And that day, Mam had collected her from the Nina, and they went off to get something to eat. And they had just a beautiful day. Mam and Ava were so close, best friends, did everything together. And that last week she got to spend time with everybody, which now you'd wonder sometimes in hindsight. I often wonder, did she know?
A lovely little girl with a beautiful little smile and two happy little eyes. Mm. I'm just looking at pictures of her here and paintings of her here in the house. And a beautiful child, of course. Tell us a little bit about her in her 4 years here, because she packed a lot in.
She did. She packed a lot in. She loved minding everybody. And only at four, she used to be minding all, you know, my friends' kids and stuff like that. She loved going shopping. And we used to come in after shopping and run upstairs, and she'd hide the shopping bags in her wardrobe. So we could hide everything from her daddy. She loved singing, she loved dancing, loved getting her her nails painted, had been on holidays. But the one thing people always used to say to her about her was that she was a gentle soul and she'd been here before. There was such gentleness and kindness to her, and minded everybody.
She didn't lick that off a stone, no, in all fairness.
Yeah, that was the type of child she was. And, you know, I wasn't working after she was born. Because actually, before Ava, I had been pregnant with twins, and I miscarried twins at 16 weeks. And I remember at the time, people were saying to us at the time, you know, nothing as bad as that will happen to you again, you know. So when she came along, she was just extra special because of what we've been through. And it was, I mean, the amount of presents she got and the clothes she got, and people were like coming to visit her and see her. And I suppose being born on New Year's Day, the early hours in Galway, and it was such a special time, you know. And those 4 years, like, I have no regrets of the 4 years I spent with her, because I was at home with her, and we had a wonderful time, you know.
Yeah, she was the golden child at the time, really. And and obviously Evan was on the way.
No, Evan was two at Evan the time,
sorry,
and Noah,
two,
was,
and
on
Noah
the way.
Was on the way. Yeah. That's it, yeah.
And Noah was on the way, and 4 weeks and a day after we lost Ava, Noah was born.
4 weeks and a day.
4 weeks and a day. So he's 4 weeks and a day. He came into the world. And I don't remember anything. I don't remember anything about the labour. I don't remember looking back at photos now of the first year when we had Noah. Like, I don't remember any of it. I suppose you kind of go into survival mode because you have a new baby. Mm. And you had a 2-year-old and a new baby, up to night feeds and looking after him as well. And I don't know. I don't know how to describe how it was, but you just had to get on with it. You know, they needed us. And I remember saying to myself, just because my life has changed forever, because my life did change. I lived a different life after Ava died. I remember thinking, my kids' life won't be any different. I'm going to make it as good or as normal for possible, you know, for them as I could. And because the following year, the following year, Sophie came along.
Yeah.
And, you know, they just kept us going. They just, you know, you had to get up, you had to do night feeds. And I still remember the first time I walked into Busy Bees. I hadn't been there. Ava loved Busy Bees, the kids play area here in Oramore. And I remember, like, forcing myself to walk in the door so, you know, Noah and Evan and, well, you know, Sophie at the time could have fun and everything like that. But I still remember walking in there, and the memories and the pain you get in your heart when you can't even breathe. It's overwhelming because she's not there, you know.
And it was the first of everything as well.
Yes.
The first time going back, the first birthday, the first.
First of everything. And, you know, for years I would have said, we're starting another year on her birthday without her, which was always really difficult. But, you know, over time, I think that, you know, it really is a journey. It really is a journey. Mm. You have to take the good days with the good days and the bad days, you know. And I remember, you know, now I can remember the 4 wonderful years and look back at the photos and the memories and, you know, but now I will say that it's her I feel sorry for, all that she missed out on.
Yeah.
And those special times for her, you know, when she should have been making her communion. She was so excited about her communion. She wanted to get her ears pierced. She was so, this is the plan. I said, of course you can get it done for your communion. And of course, when Sophie turned 4, there was no waiting for her communion. Sophie got her ears pierced when she was four because life's too short. And, you know, little things like that. But, yeah, no, we did the best of what we could at the time, you know. But about 5-6 weeks after Ava died, I went into the hospital and I was talking. We talked to a consultant. And now she was a lady that came down from Dublin. And I remember sitting in front of her. And I'd never really sat back and thought, what does a bereaved mother or father look like? You know, and I suppose nobody close to me had lost a child. So, you know, you would hear stories and your heart would be broken for people and God love them. But I never really, and she was sitting in front of me and I remember her saying to me, I know. And I said, you know, and she goes, yes, I actually lost two children myself.
Okay.
And I remember sitting there looking at her and I the first thing I said to her was, how do you get through it? Because it's so, you know, you have to go figure this out yourself. And she said, you stay as busy as you can for as long as you can. She said, every day, as busy as you can, because to the reality of what has happened, it won't hit you in another few weeks, another year, it could be a year or two. And then you're at a stronger place to be able to, I suppose, deal with
to
it.
Deal with it, yeah. I don't think it's something, I've often said this about bereavement, I don't think it's something you get over.
No.
I think it's something you deal with because you feel you have to. And you have dependents.
Yeah.
So you need to kind of keep the smile on the face and keep strong for them.
Yeah, you do, yeah. For the children, yeah, you do. And like having them around is what got us through. You know, getting up in the mornings and eventually as the time went on, they started doing it in sports activities and we went on holidays and did things and, you know, and you can keep running, you know, you can keep running, but you're bringing that pain with you. Mm. Unfortunately, you have to sit with it and kind of get yourself through it and, you know, cry if you need to cry, scream if you need to scream. But, you know, and, you know, it does pass. It does pass. And you know, then, like you said, I remember Evan's communion. You know, that was the first communion she should have had hers when we came to Evan's Green. Little days like that can be, you know, you have to try and keep yourself together, but you do get through it.
I suppose no more than everything else, you go through every emotion under the rising sun. Obviously, you know, the hurt feeling, of course, the bitterness, the you know, the anger of it all. Yeah. Why me? Why my child?
Absolutely.
Why any child? But why me?
And you question yourself and you wonder what it's all about. And, you know, you wonder why you were given this, you know, to carry and you do, but you have to kind of sit and rationalize things and like you wouldn't wish this on anybody else, you know, you wouldn't. So you kind of have to get through what you can with the best, you know, that you can in the day and the time. And at the start for the first few years, it's just a day at a time. Sometimes it's an hour at a time, you know, and try and get on the best you can for your kids and, you know, the house and make their life as normal as possible.
Speaking of the kids, do the kids talk about her?
Yeah, so Evan definitely, well, Evan would have been the only one that would have known her.
Yeah.
Evan does talk about her because she helped him take his first steps.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I still remember she was sitting in the chair in the corner. That the chair in the corner here in our sitting room, and he was here and he took his first steps over to her. And Noah and Sophie would, and Sophie would still say, you know, because the boys have each other, and Sophie would still say, I wish I had my sister here,
yeah,
you know, because she's 12 and she's coming into teenage years, and her confirmation was a few weeks ago. And my niece was here, and she was painting her nails and did her makeup and stuff for the confirmation, and you know. I actually had a pain in my heart because I knew like Ava was here. She should have been doing that, you know, for her. So much was taken from them as well to have, you know, their older sister there. And they're going into secondary school, you know, for them, she would have been there, you know, little things like that. But they do talk about her and have been involved for years with the stuff, with the work we do with the charity. You know, they've been a part of it for years as well. And are very proud to do things in her memory as well.
Of course. And I think the other thing about it is, even though they may say that, you know, with the want of having her around and all that, it's a gulp for you, because when you hear that, it's another knife. It feels like a knife is going through you again, because it brings it all back.
It does bring it all back. And I will honestly say, sometimes when I'm sitting on my own or sitting myself at night, and sometimes I'll be looking at her picture or thinking about things, sometimes you still think, did that really happen?
Yeah.
Did that really happen? You know, like the speed of it, the suddenness of it, like it just takes years to really come to terms with it all. That really did happen. And literally, as I say, in a blink of an eye, our lives changed, you know.
Of course they do.
Forever.
Of course they do. You know? The other thing that I want to ask you about is obviously at the time, you know, you were in the hospital and everything was happening around you, mm-hmm. As you said about the priest coming over at the time, mm-hmm. the surgeon or whatever at the time.
Yeah.
When were the words meningitis mentioned eventually? Or was there still a time in the middle of it all, an abyss that you were left not knowing what happened to your daughter?
We didn't know. Yeah. We didn't know. And it was a few days later before they called us back in to talk to us and to explain to us that it was meningitis. So at that time, we didn't know, and we had no answers. So it was a few days later before they rang us come back in and talked us through and told us that it was meningitis. And that they did say the strain of meningitis that she got, they called the strain she got really the silent killer because it works really quickly in the inside. Yeah. The body, and by the time it's evident on the outside, it can be, you know, at a really late stage, and it can be, you know, it's not.
Excuse my ignorance now, but what did they say? What brings it on, or what happens? Is there something that happens, or is it just something that out of the blue the body just reacts?
Yeah, no. So meningitis is airborne.
Oh right, okay.
So it spreads through coughing and sneezing. Okay. And they're still doing research to this day, and they're doing research for 30, 40, 50 years. To try and figure out how one person would be more susceptible than another person to being affected by meningitis. So there could be loads of people sitting around in a room and someone might sneeze or cough because it's airborne, and it actually goes into your nose or your throat, and it can sit there for a few days, and then it travels to the brain because it's an acquired brain injury.
All right.
So that's how. So you see there would have been compared to what, 10, 15 years ago, the number of cases would have dropped dramatically because of the vaccines that are available out there.
Okay.
So that gives you a fighting chance, you know, to against meningitis. But even being vaccinated, you can still get it. So it's actually airborne, so it can be picked up anywhere.
That's amazing.
Yeah, that's how it spread. That's amazing. So we don't know where she got it, nor would we want to know.
No.
But that's how it affects you.
And is there anything now, looking back, is there anything that people should look out for? I know, as you said, it was a silent killer.
Mm-hmm.
But is there something that people can look out for now in changes in mood with a child or fatigue or what?
So if I bring you back to what the reason why we ended up setting up the Charity Act for Meningitis was because I remember Noel saying at the time, Ava's dad saying, if there's something I could have looked at, if I had something in my hand or some information, there's a chance I could have checked it about something with the signs and symptoms of meningitis in it.
Yeah.
And I remember thinking, you know, we have to try and stop another family going through this. We have to get the awareness out there. And like, where do you start? Someone gave me an office space. I remember sitting in the office on my own with a diary. So that's where it all started 11 years ago now in July. And I remember sitting there thinking, okay, I have to figure out. So I Googled how to set up a charity because I know every charity starts with one person with an idea to try and help other people. And we came up with the name, the ACT for Meningitis, but the ACT stands for the Ava Carl Trust.
Oh, lovely. Yeah.
And ACT if you suspect meningitis. So yeah. ACT for Meningitis.
So it had the double meaning.
Yes. Mm. And then our logo obviously was a rainbow because Ava loved rainbows and a rainbow was a sign of hope. So after the rain, the rainbow appears.
Yeah.
So that's where it all came from. The charity started. And our aim was to make everybody aware of meningitis, what to look out for, and to trust their instincts. And I remember one day driving down the coast road on the way home to Armagh, and there was a rainbow there. And I remember Ava saying, why isn't there a rainbow in the sky every day? Because they're so beautiful to look at. So straight away that we knew that was to be our logo for the charity. So we started out, but I just wanted everyone to know about meningitis. I wanted them to know that anyone of any age can get meningitis. You know, babies and children up to age 5. 16 to 24 year olds is the second highest risk age group. Over 65s are the third highest risk age group, but anyone of any age can get it. And meningitis doesn't have to produce a rash. Those kind of little messages that people need to be aware of, because knowing those, acting quickly, getting into the hospital can save a life. And so that's where we started with getting them. We started our Facebook page and started from there, and we got our charity number. And then, you know, over the years, and I still am so humbled by the kindness and the support of people, you know, people not being affected by meningitis, who want to help us, you know, believe in what we're trying to do, because knowing the signs and symptoms are, you know, are key to, I suppose, stopping someone going through what we went through. And then, you know, very quickly, we started getting phone calls from people. We were starting out as an awareness charity, and very quickly people started ringing us who had been affected by meningitis. Because sadly, 1 in 10 who contract it will die, and 1 in 3 are left with life-changing side effects. So when they walk out of the hospital, they're coming out as a different person, or they're bringing home a different child who could be, you know, affected with different type of side effects. And we realised there was a massive need for support for people. So we're the only meningitis charity in Ireland, what we do. And so we started, we have a support officer who offers all our support services. They're all free around the country. And no matter where you live, we will source support for you in your community. We run online workshops so people can get support, and they can do, we have workshops for parents whose children have survived meningitis. We have bereavement workshops, we have remembrance days, we have family days, and we will support not just the individual, but the family, because the knock on and ripple effect of meningitis. I know what our family, you know, trying to get Evan, navigate Evan through it all and through his loss. And he woke up the next morning, his sister was gone.
Yeah.
He went to sleep and she was there in the other bed, and he woke up the next morning and she was gone. And dealing with those kind of emotions, you know, it's the knock on ripple effect of meningitis. It has such an effect on families and wider communities, especially when there's a loss. We're there with all that kind of support. So that's what we've been kind of doing, and getting our awareness out there in doctors, pharmacies and GPs and in that kind of stuff. And we have our little awareness cards that you can pick up and bring them at home. And, you know, empowering people to trust their instincts, to say, my child, like that night that Ava died, I remember Noel said, she's not usually like this when she's sick.
Yeah.
And he knew something wasn't right, you know. And empowering people to trust their instincts and say, I'm not happy, can I get a second opinion? They're not usually like this and they're sick. Can you rule out meningitis for me? Those kind of little messages is what we've been doing and trying to get the awareness out there, because it will save lives, and it has. And I suppose a part of us is to have Ava remembered as well.
Of course.
You know, and that's really important, because when we only had her for 4 years, and I always say, if someone said to me, you'll only have her for 4 years, would you have, you know, would you have gone through all of this? 100%, because she's left such an impact.
Of course, yeah.
On our lives, and of me, and the way I've changed and tried to live my life now. And I'm grateful for everything. I'm grateful for everything I have. And for a few years, it really was a struggle for a few years, but I spent a lot of time, and I, you know, I enjoy my meditation now and little things like that. And I have a really positive outlook on life, and I'm trying to, you know, put that on my kids and stuff as well. And we do a lot of stuff together, spend time together, and, you know, make the most of every day, because literally you wake up in the morning, you don't know what the day is going to bring. So you have to make the most of what you have and be grateful for what you have.
Do you find as well that, apart from you helping so many people and currently helping people and will help people in the future, mm-hmm. do you find that it's a therapy for you too, to be involved in Act for Meningitis? Does it give you a sense of, you know, obviously the helping and the mm-hmm. therapy of getting over a child, like a bereavement?
Yeah, I 100% it does. I remember we spent time in Barrettstown. They ran the workshop, our weekend retreat weekends, and you go 3 times in the space of 18 months. And I met other people, other bereaved parents, and it just gave me so much hope. I could see them and they were sitting, and it was such early days for us. But I remember they'd be sitting and laughing together, and you know, there's a part of you way back then thinking, oh God, will I ever do that again? You know, it was a guilt around it, you know, trying to enjoy your life a bit again. But when you see people ahead, and it just gave me hope that there is, you know, there is a future out there. And, you know, I remember someone say, you get bitter or you get better. You know, you have to make these choices for the way you want to live your life, and live her life in her memory in a positive way, you know.
Well, that's more than likely what she would have wanted to.
Yes.
You know, she was a happy, happy little woman.
Yes.
So I think live on with that legacy that mm-hmm. that she had created for her own 4 years here.
Absolutely.
Yeah. No, the charity itself then, it's flying. It really is. It's going well. Did you notice through the social media as well that there was a lot of friends requests? Was there a lot of people, say, empathizing with you along the line saying, look, this is so fantastic that you have done this. Mm-hmm. You've set up the social media platform and the charity. Did you find that the support was there?
I still stand back sometimes, and I'm just, you know, what started out with me sitting there with a little notebook, or my diary. I still have the diary, the original diary from the 11 years ago. And from where we were then to where we are now, the support of the people, you know, starting with the people in Galway. I mean, the people in Galway over the years have supported us. I mean, I can't put into words. It's sometimes it's so overwhelming, because you know everyone has so much going on in their own lives too, and their own struggles and their bad days and the good days. But they've come out and supported us over the years. It's been phenomenal. And as the charity grew, then you know nationally, the support from communities around the country and people that we still stay in contact with, that I pick up the phone and we have chats with a lot of the families that have been in our services over the years. And, you know, we've been on the radio and the telly and, you know, everything like that. I mean, people the support has been just so amazing. And I'm so grateful for it all, because we wouldn't be where we are if it wasn't for the support of thousands of people at this stage, you know, around the country who believed in what we did.
Yeah, but there's something about the Irishness as well, though.
Yeah.
There's just this kind of like, let's get behind this person. Let's give them the you know, the help that they need.
And the biggest thing for me was, you know, all my years growing up in Galway and out and about and around the place and everything like that, the amount of people that came back into my life that I would have known saying I was 18, 19, 20 and are now, you know, married with kids and, you know, and working in different places around Galway and everything like that, the amount of them that came back to support us over the years that I mightn't have seen in years, and they just turn up at a run or turn up at a walk or turn up at an event we were having. It's just been amazing. The kindness and goodness of people is just, and you know, it's just been amazing. I'm so blessed.
Yeah, and I have to say your logo is so, you know, no matter where you see it, you know exactly what it is.
Yeah.
And it's fantastic. It was a really beautiful logo, but you can tell that there was a lot of love put behind that logo as well. You can see it in it. Now, you have a wonderful team.
Yes.
You have a good team. I met a few of them here today.
Yes.
And tell me about your team, what they mean to you.
Yeah, so we have, Sarah and Dawn and Emer have been with the charity nearly like 10 years. And Sarah ended up getting involved with the charity because she lost her best friend to meningitis. And Sarah does all our awareness and our office admin and stuff like that. But we kind of all help each other because it's just the few of us. We kind of help each other with a bit of everything. Dawn does all our fundraising and has been with the charity for nearly 10 years as well. And Emer is an amazing psychotherapist who is our contact for our families and kind of facilitates all our support services. And then Kira is with us at the moment, who's a volunteer who started with us when she was 16. So she's 10 years volunteering with the charity as well. And she's people that come in to support the charity back in the day. They've just stayed with us over the years, and they could be out shaking a bucket, or they could be face painting, or they could be dancing on the stage, or they could be doing a run. They've done a mixture of everything. You wouldn't know what the day brings when you're with the charity. But like, they have stayed with me throughout it all because they want to help make a difference as well.
They do,
that's,
but
that's
I think
the reason behind it.
Yeah, but even from being here for the few minutes that I'm here with you, you can tell that it's nearly like a sisterly situation here. You can tell that you talk to each other about everything.
Yeah.
And I think that that means an awful lot to the charity as well, where you know mm-hmm. where each other stands.
Absolutely. And that means absolutely, an awful lot. Absolutely, yeah. And they have stood by me with everything over the years. Stood by me with everything. And as I said, we're still here. We're still standing. Now, I will say the last 2 years with COVID have been extremely challenging. Extremely challenging. And this year, probably more than anything, because, you know, people are trying to get back on with their lives and stuff like that. So for small charities, even though we're a small charity in the west of Ireland, we have to shout a bit louder to try and make a bigger impact to be heard. Because when it's disease specific, you know, and it's a disease like meningitis, that wouldn't be happening every day, you know, that you have to shout a bit louder to be heard. So it is challenging, especially for small charities, and all charities and all lines of business after COVID. Everyone's been affected, and this is the knock-on effect of it for everybody. But we're still here. We restructured all our support services, so they're all available online. So in the comfort of their own home now, people can, you know, can log on and get the support they need, and, you know, interact with other people on the same journey as them. We will have our first family day in August up in Dublin Zoo. We're getting our families all together again, and there's loads of family really excited about seeing each other. And so, like, we're making plans, and we have a lot of awareness campaigns coming up during the summer and into September with our TY campaign and college campaign and stuff like that. We'll be doing all that kind of work as well. So there's loads to still be doing. We still have to make everybody aware about meningitis. Everybody needs to know about meningitis.
Yeah, I think the crazy thing about it is that, you know, unless the sad thing about it is unless it affects you, you don't learn about it. That's the crazy thing about it. And when you do hear of a sad situation of somebody that may have passed away from meningitis, that's, oh God, that poor family. But nobody goes and educates themselves about it. You know, and I think that that's the most important thing. I think education is the key to all this.
100%, you hit the nail on the head. Mm. Making yourself meningitis aware is the most important thing you can do. You know, I remember there was a survey done, it could be 7 or 8 years ago, and I remember 99% of GPs that were questioned in the survey said meningitis was the one disease that they feared. Because the symptoms early on can present itself like a flu, or they'd say in the student age group, it could be like a bad hangover or something like that. And gradually over hours, someone with meningitis will get sicker. You know, and they get this excruciating headache or getting sick. And, you know, some of the student age groups, the families we have in our service would say, they say it was a headache like they'd never experienced before, that they'd never felt so sick before.
And is there anything physical apart? You're talking about physically sick as well, as in...
Yes,
as in,
yeah.
Yeah.
So babies and small children, first of all, would be hyper screech, bulging fontanella, which is a little bulge in the top of their head.
Yeah.
Restlessness, getting sick, not like being handled. And then kind of with the kind of children age group could be severe headache, limp, high pitch temperature, bright lights bothering them, a pain in their neck, pain in their head. And then you talk about the rash where there was a lot of confusion we saw over the years, that people always thought that only babies get meningitis, and they always thought that there had to be a rash. But with meningitis, if the rash does appear, it's at a really late stage and like urgent medical attention is needed, but the rash may never appear. So they say with the meningitis rash is to get a glass or a tumbler if a rash does appear and roll the glass over it. And if the rash, if it doesn't disappear, that is like, that's, you know, very serious, because that's septic sepsis and you need to get medical attention. So, but the rash doesn't have to appear. So if people want to go onto our website, our awareness card is there actually. It's www.actformeningitis.ie, and they can download the awareness card, and the signs and symptoms are on it and what to look out for. But trusting your instincts and ensuring your children's vaccinations are up to date really, you know, can save lives.
And even the silent part of it, as in the one that Ava had, obviously, what is the mortality rate on that now? What is the situation with
it's the same with the bacterial. It's one in 10 who get that will sadly die from it because it's bacterial. So she got pneumococcal meningitis, which is a strain. And ironically, Ava died in the April, and the pneumococcal vaccine was introduced that year in October into Ireland. So it's so important, the vaccines, because it really protects you, gives you a fighting chance.
And is that within the vaccines that children get anyway? Yes. Almost like, if you want to call it, the compulsory.
Yes, the national immunization schedule that babies get, those vaccines are in there, for that. Okay. And when they go into first year, they'll also get a booster, first year in secondary school, and give a booster for some of the strains as well to give them extra protection. So the vaccines are out there. But just to remember that even having your vaccinations, you can still contract meningitis. But they do give you a high level of protection.
Yeah. Now, before we finish up, the government situation, is there any finances at all coming from government? I'm sure you've gone that direction as well to try and get...
So there will be grants and fundings out there that's available, and we have applied, and we have been successful with some of the small grants out there. But there is... thousands and thousands of registered charities in Ireland. So, if everybody is kind of going for the same pot, like it can be difficult. So we would have been very dependent on community fundraising, and people would have done fundraising for us. So that really stopped in the past 2 years.
Yeah.
And while there was government supports available for charities, which we gladly received during the COVID times, because we kept open for support and awareness during that time, it's extremely challenging now. There is a small bit of funding out there, but it's very difficult. And so we're doing the best we can, with like trying to get, corporate support and stuff like that, or people taking on personal challenges for us and things like that, which is happening. We have some people do the Women's Mini Marathon, and there's different events coming up, and people will try and support us where they can. So any kind of support, we're so grateful, because, it's so important. We feel that the work we're doing and getting the awareness out there and being able to support people, as I said, we're the only meningitis charity in Ireland. So it's a big responsibility, but it's something that we...
And how many counties have you kind of gone into? Because I read a little bit about the counties.
We have a community kind of support program. So we support a county people in 24 counties over the years. And a lot of people that will come into our services could be in for a while and then maybe gone and then may come back again. So when families or individuals come into our services, they could be there for a few months. They may be there for a few years, with different kind of workshops and support days. And then maybe their child might start school and maybe struggling a bit and may need some support then. So they may come back to us and we're there to support them all for as long as they need and support the whole family, and all our services are free.
That's unbelievable. But that takes an awful, awful lot of work, a lot of voluntary work.
Yeah.
The donate on your website as well, that's all there. I think it's €4, if I'm not really mistaken.
Yes.
For
It does, but like it's like I said, when you get the phone calls, when you get the phone calls from somebody who said, I have your awareness card, I heard your talk and went to the hospital, or I remember a few years ago, a mum ringing to say, thank you, because of your support, my child has now made a friend in school.
Oh, okay.
So like, it's all worth it.
Of course it
matter.
Is. It's,
and we'll keep going for, we'll keep going for as long as we're needed, for as long as we can, because... nobody should feel alone after they've been affected by meningitis, be it through loss or living with the side effects. Everyone should deserve, to get the support that they need, and that's what we're here for, and that's what we're trying to do.
Well, I think the lovely thing about it is as well that Ava, through you, is helping an awful lot of people.
Yes.
That has obviously gone through or is going through the same thing that she went through.
Absolutely. And it's to have her memory kept alive and to give other bereaved families, if they want an opportunity to do something to have their loved one remembered, we're here to try and help them and support them through that, if they want to have their run and what different things over the years that have been on. And it's really important.
Of course it is.
That they're remembered.
Yeah.
It's really important that they're remembered. For anybody that's lost a child, and that's what we want to try and do, make sure that they have as much of an opportunity as we did.
And you're the only meningitis organisation in the country.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's just us. Mm. Now more than ever in these challenging times, I think it's important that we continue to get the awareness out there, because for the last few years, you know, people, the numbers had dropped because people were at home and they weren't mixing and stuff. So the numbers are back again. So there is cases. So now more than ever, it's important that people are aware of meningitis. Like back to school times, there being an increase in cases. Winter time is when you'll see cases of the bacterial meningitis. And then during the summer, you would see cases of viral meningitis. So there's never a time that you don't need to be aware of meningitis.
Yeah, it's always there.
It's always there.
Well, I think the most important thing is obviously through a social media platform and websites, hashtag defeat meningitis, yes, as you have yourself. And through that quote that you had as well on social media, hashtag life after meningitis, mm-hmm, as well. I think it's most important. I just want to say a huge thank you for being so honest and having a chat with me today, pretty much. Very difficult, very, very difficult, but thanks. And I mean that. And I would ask everybody to get onto the website, www.actformeningitis.ie. Mm-hmm. Check out your social media platforms, of course, Act for Meningitis on Facebook.
Yes, and very active Facebook page.
Yes, you
very
do.
Very active, we do, yeah.
Yeah, you really,
great
really do.
Great interaction and a lot of sharing and people. Mm. A simple share of a post could reach somebody who doesn't know about meningitis.
Absolutely.
And could save a life.
Always, it only takes one.
Well, just the one.
It just takes one.
Just
that's
one.
What it's all about.
Yeah.
So, Siobhan, thank you very much indeed. I wish you and your family the very best in the future. Keep the happy thoughts, keep the positivity, keep the meditation going. Yeah. And that's pretty much it. So thanks a million. Check them out online. Check them out on social media. Thanks for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you. Check out the Act for Meningitis website, www.actformeningitis.ie, or check out Facebook and Instagram. The next podcast will be available June 16th.